Welcome back to the Gardening with Joy and Holly radio show. Moments away, Brian DeVore. But first, do you have yellow jackets in your area? Rescue has the tool that can help rid them from your place.
Yeah, during these dry summer months and as we move into fall, you'll notice more aggressive yellow jackets flying around. They're looking for your barbecue meats, sweet drinks, as well as water sources. So you want to keep them at bay with Rescue Yellow Jacket traps. Rescue Yellow Jacket traps are eco-friendly, do-it-yourself option to keep those stinging pests away from you. These traps use a powerful lure for yellow jackets and will not attract beneficial honeybees. All Rescue products are made in the USA. You can go to rescue.com to find where to buy all Rescue products, yellow jacket traps, and other pest control solutions. That's rescue.com. Mm-hmm.
Holly, let's go to the hotline and bring in our guest for this week.
Brian DeVore is a journalist who, for the past 30 years, has specialized in writing about agriculture, the environment, and natural history. He is also the author and contributor to many publications, including his own book, Wildly Successful Farming, Sustainability, and the New Agricultural Land Ethic. Welcome to the program, Brian.
Thank you very much.
Well, we want to thank you for taking time out and not only going to educate Holly and myself, but all of our listeners across the country.
Yeah, this is it's a fun time to be looking at issues like agriculture and soil health and gardening and all of that.
So let's start with this question. What is a land stewardship project, or what is land stewardship?
Yeah, so the Land Stewardship Project, the organization I work for, we're based out of Minnesota, but we work throughout the upper Midwest, and we're a farmer-based membership organization that works with farmers and who are interested in doing stewardship or sustainable type practices, which are, you know, stewardship, kind of the basic idea behind that is you're stewarding that land and handing it off to the next generation better than you found it. But kind of working, dovetailing with that is sustainability and sustainable agriculture or regenerative agriculture, which is kind of the idea that you are using practices that don't mine the soil, that don't kind of take away more resources than you can put back into it, and you're kind of helping the land kind of regenerate itself and sustain itself through practices that, I guess an example would be, for example, if you're using cover crops, they can really help build that soil health in a way that you don't have to resort to constantly trying to add chemical-based fertilizers and nutrients that land, that soil can kind of build its own fertility and that, its own health. So that's, you know, we've had a very productive food production system over the last 100 years or so, especially since World War II, but we're starting to see some negative impacts of that where the land is not really able to sustain itself into the future without constant application of these outside inputs. So we're working with a lot of farmers who are looking at things like organic, but also just what we would call in general sustainable or regenerative agriculture.
So are you working, or is there like agricultural chemical farmers, I call big ag, are do you see people come to you and go, hey, I need help. I've got to change something. What I'm doing is not working. Can you help me figure out how to make this work better on my end as a farmer?
Exactly. We're starting, particularly right now, we're in the middle of what I would call kind of a little bit of a revolution or a real, there's a lot of buzz around what we would call soil health, which is kind of, as I alluded to earlier, this idea that you can build your soil's health through some of these practices that build that soil biome, build up that carbon, and kind of help it be resilient in the long term. And so we hold a lot of field days and workshops for farmers, and we're seeing an increasing number of what I would call conventional farmers come to these field days and workshops. And that's something maybe they wouldn't have attended in the past, but they're starting to see some of the shortcomings of a system that's reliant on so many outside inputs and in a sense is kind of mining that soil of nutrients. They're seeing maybe some crop failures they hadn't seen in the past. They're seeing issues with not being able to manage water. With climate change, we're seeing a lot of impacts on agriculture there. So they're looking for ways to kind of make that that soil and their land more resilient in the face of kind of extreme weather events. We're also seeing an early conservation practice or stewardship practice was no-till agriculture, which is a great way to save soil. It's because you're not disturbing that soil, you're not plowing up that soil, and it's done a lot of good. But we're starting to see some farmers who were pioneers in that realizing that there's some limits to what that can do, that you need to maybe also integrate more diverse cropping systems like cover crops, diverse rotations with livestock, doing rotational grazing type systems. So we are starting to see a lot more conventional farmers show up to a lot of these events.
Well, I grew up on an agricultural farm, a conventional farm, and just the fertilizer alone, that cost was astronomic per so many pounds per acre or tonnage per acre. By doing it in a way that almost the land, you can do it naturally, saves a lot of money in the pocketbook of these farmers who are working on very, very thin margins to begin with.
Yeah, exactly. And that is, as we see the science advance on some of these practices, we are seeing a lot of good numbers come out around, you know, if you build that soil's natural fertility or ability to resist weeds or insect pests, you can save a ton of money on chemicals. You don't have to constantly be reliant on going and buying those chemicals to kind of prop up that system.
That's very helpful information. Now, tell us about your book, The Wildly Successful Farming, Sustainability, and the New Agricultural Land Ethic. What can our listeners expect when they pick up a copy?
Yeah, so this is a book. I wrote it for the University of Wisconsin Press. And it's kind of a combination of, I'm telling the stories of several farmers that I've met over the years. Part of my job is I have a really cool job in that through the Land Stewardship Project, I get to travel around the Midwest and interview farmers who are doing some of these innovative practices. And so over the years, I've kind of noticed some, common threads that these farmers share and some of the ideas, some of the reasons that they got into this and some of the practices that are working for them and other practices that aren't working for them. They're real innovative and real experimental in a lot of what they're doing and often kind of out there on their own doing this stuff. So the book kind of tells some, it's a series of profiles of some of the farmers that I've met over the years. And the common theme is these are farmers who really refuse to separate kind of the wild part of the land from the domesticated agricultural part of it. They've been able to blend some of their practices, some of their kind of production practices of crops and livestock into some of the natural systems out there. And I guess an example of that would be, for example, I go back a little bit to the soil health issue. There's a farm family that I profile who were able to build their soil health so extensively that there was a time when some grasshoppers came into their county and was kind of decimating small grains and really haven't gone to town on their neighbor's fields. And they did not impact their fields because they had built their soil health to such a point that their small grains crops had a real high sugar content, and the grasshoppers, when they were feeding on those crops, actually got intoxicated. So it's examples like that where maybe instead of going in and spraying and killing all the grasshoppers as well as the beneficial insects, they were able to kind of use the land's natural systems. I've also seen examples where farmers were able to put in wildlife habitat that is a host to, say, beneficial birds and beneficial insects who help kind of fight those pests that aren't so beneficial to a farm. Rotational grazing, managed rotational grazing is a really big thing being used by livestock farmers now, where they're kind of using that traditional system of the way the bison used to rotate through the tall grass prairie and produce meat and milk, kind of using those rotational systems, using perennial grasses, perennial forages, that type of thing. So I talk a little bit about that. I profile these farmers, and then I also talk about some of the barriers that they face. Because, you know, it's great to talk about all these ideas, but there are some significant policy and market barriers that kind of make it so not every farmer can do this type of thing.
So we are talking with Brian DeVore, a journalist and an author that has written all about agriculture, environment, and natural history.
So maybe for people who are listening and they go, okay, well, that's great. The farmer can now transition more to a natural means. What is the time frame that a conventional farmer comes to you and says, here's what I want to do on 40 acres? How long is that time frame before the completion of the task is done?
Yeah, that's a good question. So often the short answer is your task is never done. It's kind of a continuum.
Right.
But that said, what's really kind of exciting, and I go back to this kind of the innovations we're seeing with soil health right now. What's exciting about that is we're seeing conventional farmers who come in, maybe they start getting a more diverse rotation of crops in there. They start putting in some cover crops, and cover crops is basically a system where you're putting in small grains and brassicas and other kind of non-cash crops in between your growing season. Like right now, they would, when they harvest in the fall, maybe they would put in a cereal rye or something like that that overwinters, and that provides living roots in the system throughout the year instead of having that land bare through the winter and early spring. What we're seeing is with, say, for example, you start to build that soil biome with all those living roots in there and build that carbon, you can start to see some pretty significant improvements within 3 years. I've just talked to numerous farmers and been on numerous farms where that seems to be kind of the period of time. And that's where you're going to realize, kind of figure out if it's going to work for you and if it's something you can manage. It's that kind of 3 year period. With some of these cover crops, for example, you can see some impacts right away within a year, but for it to be a consistent part of your farm, really it's that kind of three, maybe five year type of time frame that you're working with a little bit.
Okay. So what can backyard gardeners do that would be good for their soil and their land sustainability, just little changes that they can make?
Yeah, so that's, a lot of these practices that these farmers are using, you're probably well aware of some of them. I mean, you can downscale to the garden level. And again, I go back to cover crops and really trying to keep that land covered 365 days out of the year. And cover crops are kind of misnamed. I mean, a lot of people think, well, isn't it good enough just to put some mulch down and keep that land protected? And that does do a lot of good. It keeps it from eroding and keeps it from being exposed to inclement weather. But the beauty of cover crops and planting those crops, say, in the fall is, and they get started a little bit in the fall, and then, of course, the freeze-up will come and maybe get some snow on top of them. There's still living roots down in that soil doing the work of building that soil biome over the wintertime. So that's the real benefit. I kind of almost prefer to call them continuous living cover, because you have some activity, some biological activity going on throughout the winter. And that is so beneficial to see that. I mean, other things they can do is, and a lot of these farmers that I write about in wildly successful farming do, is plant pollinator habitat adjacent to fields. And so you could definitely do that on the garden level, have some pollinator habitat. It's going to help your vegetables and your fruits, and also it's going to attract beneficial insects that kind of feed on some of those bad critters out there that are kind of predators on your crops, on your vegetable crops. I really composting is a really exciting area right now where, everybody thinks they know how to compost, but there's some real new innovations now where people are making compost teas. There's some farmers we're working with right now in Minnesota who are experimenting with this something called the Johnson Sioux Bioreactor, which is a way of composting in a real intense manner and then making kind of an extract out of that and spraying it onto the fields, and that kind of kickstarts the biology. The beauty of that system is one of the farms we're working with is a small vegetable operation. So you can downscale that to a smaller version, and they're going to make extract, and then they're going to be using that on their small vegetable plots. So there's some pretty exciting stuff out there. And we do have a lot of gardeners who show up to our soil health workshops because these can be kind of, like I said, downscaled to their level. You know, a lot of the same practices that work on a 500-acre field will work on a garden, just on a smaller scale.
Absolutely. Well, Brian, we thank you for the time, the education, the knowledge you've shared with not only Holly and myself, but all of our listeners. How can people find out more about you? How can they get a hold of your book?
Yeah, you can go to my website is badevore.com. It's BADEVORE.com. And there you can order the book there and find out more about some of the stuff we're doing.
Well, Brian, we absolutely appreciate the time you've offered us and the level of education you've shared with us in this short amount of time. We thank you.
Thank you very much. It's been great.
Absolutely. And
for more information, please visit thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com.